Hello and welcome to this week's International Media with me, Claire Broadhurst. First, let's take a closer look at press freedom in Belarus. In a bid to loosen Russia's grip on the country, President Alexander Lukashenko is trying to get cozy with the international community, but aside from the release of leading political prisoners, the human rights situation in his country remains as disastrous as ever. The authorities continue to trample on media freedom in particular, and Belarus is still ranked 157th out of 180 countries in the latest Reporters Without Borders World Press Freedom Index. I spoke to Yuan Beer, the head of RSF's Eastern Europe and Central Asia desk. He describes the current state of media freedom in Belarus.
I would qualify it as dismal. It's a dismal level of press freedom. It's extremely difficult to be an independent journalist in Belarus. Broadcast media in particular are entirely controlled by the state. Independent broadcasters are forced to operate from abroad, and independent journalist freelancers who keep trying to work with them are harassed under various pretexts. The control on the internet also has severely been tightened over the past few years. So still there are a handful of independent print outlets in the country, which are also regularly harassed.
He says harassment of independent journalists has not stopped at all, and further crackdown has taken place in January 2016.
Since the beginning of the year, there's been a new wave of fines against independent journalists. So this is a classic in Belarus. Freelancers who work with independent media, which are based abroad, are regularly targeted by prosecutions on the pretext that they are making illegal media content because they work without accreditation. On the other hand, an independent reporter, Pavel Dabravolsky, was beaten up while covering the arrest of two peaceful protesters in Minsk on 25th January. He was beaten up by police officers, and afterwards, in addition, Dabravolsky was fined for allegedly attacking one of the police officers. Dabravolsky, who was himself the victim of an attack by a police officer, was convicted for allegedly attacking them. So this is utterly ridiculous. Well, these recent developments once again show that there is absolutely nothing new, no improvement on the front of press freedom in the country.
Beer says the international community has to intervene, to be firm and to remind Minsk that media freedom is a right that should be fully integrated into society.
It's quite paradoxical to see that Belarus is trying to seduce, to woo the international community, trying to pretend that it's no more the last dictatorship in Europe, that it's making progress. There have been absolutely no change on the front of human rights in Belarus, but it hasn't prevented the EU to lift a number of sanctions that were imposed on Belarus after the 2010 crackdown on civil protests. It seems, unfortunately, that maybe President Lukashenko is not so wrong, hoping that it doesn't need to make progress on press freedom to effectively integrate the international community and especially get closer to the EU, since probably what matters for the EU is to repel the Russian influence wherever it can. And so if Belarus is now trying to get closer to the EU, then probably the EU is happy to get closer to Belarus, not looking too closely at the human rights situation in the country.
Let's now look into recent studies that reveal how the media in general has failed to connect the dots between the issues of climate change and capitalism. Surrounding the recent COP21 summit, experts say it was about time the media paid closer attention to reporting on climate change. Jean-Baptiste Combi is a sociologist. He recently published a book called The Issue of Climate Change, Genesis and Depolitization of a Public Problem. According to him, media outlets are not taking the right approach when it comes to covering climate change.
They mainly deal with first consequences of climate change in order to make it more concrete for the audience. So they will focus on what they call natural catastrophes, like floods or different meteorological events. They really focus on consequences. They try to illustrate the issue, which is, probably a good thing. But doing that, they never talk about causes. What are the real causes of climate change? More and more, they also deal with solutions to climate change, because it's also an aspect which is now, since the COP21, at the agenda of the political debates, the solutions. It's the main thing now. So, of course, they deal with it, but they just talk about technical, economical, or individual solutions, but never with political solutions, like political in the sense that how we organize the way we live together once more, how we define the social structure, like how we define urban policies, agricultural policies. It's always fragmented.
And he says this fragmentation leads to misinformation of the public opinion. He explains several angles that need to be addressed.
First, there is a big work of political imagination. And this work is done in a different alternative public space. So if the journalists were more informed about all these political alternatives, if they were also more able to be reflexive about what they write, it's a question of the formations, how they are trained. It needs to have public media and not private media. It's also an abuse point, but we have to have it in mind. But it's not only, I think, journalists and media, it's also all the actors who frame the climate change narrative. So I mean scientists, climate scientists, NGOs, civil societies, and of course official institutions. If the political players were more ideologically diversified, maybe it will open some doors for journalists to talk and to address this issue of capitalism and climate change.
Finally, let's take a look at the International Federation of Journalists' latest report. Since 1990, 2,297 journalists and media staff were killed while doing their work. Since its creation, the numbers have jumped from double to triple digits, peaking at 155 killings of journalists and media staff in 2006, the deadliest year on record. Anthony Bélanger is the IFJ Secretary General. He explains that while it's generally expected that many journalists get killed during conflicts, such as Bosnia in the 90s or Iraq in 2006, he found that the majority of deaths actually occurred during peaceful situations.
La plupart des pays qui sont les plus meurtriers pour les journalistes ne sont pas forcément des pays en guerre.
Most of the countries which are the most dangerous for journalists aren't necessarily at war. On the contrary, there are countries we never hear about in the media. I think of the Philippines, for example. A very dangerous country. That's where the biggest massacre of journalists happened. 32 journalists were killed at the same time in 2009. But also Mexico, Pakistan, Russia, India, Somalia, Brazil, or Colombia. In the past 25 years, these have become the top 10 most dangerous places for media staff. And these aren't countries involved in a war, or countries that have a bad reputation when it comes to press freedom. So there's a need to be careful with what's being said. Most of the time, it's simply local journalists that pay the high price for reporting in their countries.
Bélanger explains that they also found an increase in levels of violence against journalists around the world due to a lack of action to eradicate the impunity for killings and other attacks on media professionals.
C'est le deuxième aspect de ce travail que nous menons ici à Bruxelles depuis 90.
The second aspect of our 25-year investigation is that of the 2,297 journalists killed in their work, and this is according to UNESCO figures, just 1 in 10 of those killings is being investigated. So needless to say, this is catastrophic for two reasons. First, in memory of our colleagues, when someone dies, we need to remember those who are still alive, their wives, their children. I've met quite a lot in Pakistan this year. The second reason, and this is just as bad, is the message that it sends to all our colleagues in the field and to all killers of journalists. And journalism is one important piece of democracy. And if we start to take down democracy, it's the beginning of the end. And even worse than that, such impunity is like saying, yeah, go ahead, there are 9 chances out of 10, nothing's going to happen to you.
Bélanger says governments need to comply with their international obligations by investigating journalists' killing and bringing those responsible to justice. This brings us to the end of this week's magazine. Thank you for listening and join us next week for another edition of International Media.